Welcome to the Ag Innovation News Podcast, presented by the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute of Minnesota. Welcome to the Ag Innovation News Podcast here from AURI. I'm Jamie Dickerman, your host from the Red River Farm Network. And today we are joined by Kush Shandek. He is with Purus, and we're going to learn all about Purus today and what they're all about, plant-based ingredients. And Kush, thanks so much for taking time to be here. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely, Jamie. This is very exciting.
Well, it's exciting to get to know about Purus because talk about that name. That is a major player in plant-based ingredients. 40-year overnight success is what I've read at times here. Talk to me about this journey of Purus. First of all, if people aren't familiar, I guess tell us what Purus is if they don't know.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you would ask Jerry, the guy who started Purus, he probably wouldn't call it overnight success, but here we are. So it all started, and I'm actually very humbled feel a lot of excitement to tell this story. It all started in 1985 when Jerry Lorenzen, he decided to take that leap of faith. Trying to decide if he wanted to grow plants to feed animals or feed humans. And he was like, hey, the population is going to go from 6 billion from where it was then to 10 billion. And then there's going to be a shift where people are going to be eating differently. So he wanted to create a system where he would be able to feed people plant-based proteins. Back then, think about it, in 1985, this was a very bizarre concept. You know, he was trying to grow soybeans to feed humans. This was like, people were like, Jerry, you are crazy. Like, you know, you grow soybeans to feed animals and then you get the meat back. But he was like, no. I want to grow soybeans to feed humans. Because back then he knew that protein one day is going to be this big thing. And here we are in 2026, and it's all about protein. So I think there's something about visionaries, you know. People always think, you know, they're crazy, their ideas are crazy, but they have this grit or this tenacity in them that, you know, they just believe in that thing so much, and they just know that that's going to be a thing. And so Jerry started this in 1985. He started with growing soybeans, and things that he wanted to do was like everything was going to be non-GMO. That was like, hey, I want to grow a non-GMO supply chain. And for the first decade and a half, he really focused on like literally perfecting the genetics. So one thing is like, if you don't own the genes, he says like you will lose your pants. So basically, if you don't own the seed, you can't build a system that is going to be utilizing those genetics. So he really worked on creating genetics and then started settling the soybeans. And slowly he kind of realized like, hey, now like once you have the genetics, he wanted to create a system that would utilize the crop. You know, you can only go so far by selling the crop. So then slowly, as we come into the 2000s, he started buying facilities that would further process the soybeans. And then we also had, a breeding program for peas as well. And that's going to come in the story shortly. So we bought a facility in Turtle Lake, Wisconsin. Like in 2011 to kind of start utilizing a lot of the soybeans he was growing. And then one thing we realized that, hey, competing in the soybean world was just, it was very competitive. You know, you can only go so far, but there were so many different big players in the soy world. So it was really hard for us to compete. But he had these peas that he was breeding over these years. And then we had to pivot there was a point in between 2013 and 2014 where, as a business, we had to decide, like, hey, do we keep doing processing soybeans or do we pivot to peas? Because, you know, soy, again, soy is a wonderful protein, but it just is not very Google friendly. So then we had to decide, like, hey, peas was, you know, people were starting to talk about peas back then. And so then as a business, we had to decide, like, hey, we have these, you know, genetics that Jerry had been working on for so many years. He was like, hey, we have these peas. Do you want to take these and then kind of further process them? And that's where I came in as a young food scientist. You know, got my master's in food science from Michigan State, and Jerry gave me the opportunity to kind of really design the process to take the peas, convert the peas into different components. So at Turtle Lake, Wisconsin, that's where we started this process of converting peas into proteins. And in 2018 and 19, we kind of did a joint venture with Cargill and really took this concept to scale. Because anything that we do, if you can't do it at scale, it's not going to make a big impact. So then we decided to build a brownfield facility in Dawson, Minnesota. So it's the largest pea protein facility in the world. So here we are.
Wow. I mean, and talk about a story. I mean, that you're able to kind of thumbnail that pretty well, considering all the things that all the different twists and turns there. But when you look at this, Kush, and you talk about the steps that you've made, I mean, the innovation that has gone on with this company over time, what you've been able to do, how do you define and measure the innovation that leads Purist to where it's at right now? Because so much has been done. So much ground has been covered in this time.
Yeah, absolutely. So the way we define innovation at Purist, it doesn't have to be this like breakthrough idea that just like novel to the world. Innovation in the context of business to us, what it means, it starts with customer in the center. You know, understanding what the customer wants and needs. That's the first step. The second step is then basically understanding the constraints of the business to understand the guardrails on, like, can you take the system that has been built and deliver a solution to the customer based on what has been built? Can you be creative enough to kind of understand what that gap is? There is a beautiful book that Eric Ries has written, Lean Startup. So it's all about, he talks about build, measure, and learn. So basically building something like creating an MVP product. So it's a minimal viable concept. And then basically the next step is measuring it. So basically understanding how the customers react. It doesn't have to be, a perfected product by then, because the customer's needs, wants always change. But then we measure it against the customer's want and then learn. That's how I would say I would define innovation.
Now, plant proteins are the cornerstone here. Talking about it, what are some of the key technical challenges, you know, that develop when you're talking about high quality plant proteins? You know, you're going to run into some things, going to run into some roadblocks, some challenges. How has your team overcome these challenges?
That's a great question. So, from a technical standpoint, there is the big challenge of, like, not all size fits, like not having one size fits all approach. So when you're creating ingredients, you just can't create one ingredient and say this one ingredient is going to fit into different applications. So when I'm talking about applications, it could be a protein beverage. It could be a protein smoothie. It could be a protein bar. It could be a protein snack. It could be a plant-based meat. It could be a plant-based egg. You know, so the list can go on and on and on. So when you look at plant-based proteins, it's a very dynamic animal. So no pun intended, but what I mean by that is like you have to look at the protein structure and see how would that protein work in different applications, and then designing a system, designing a protein that would fit perfectly for that application. So for example, one of the challenges that there are with plant-based proteins is solubility. And that really matters when you're just designing. Let's just talk about a simple product, protein shake. When you're drinking a protein shake, you don't want the protein to just settle out. You want the protein to be soluble enough, smooth enough, so the experience of the customer drinking the protein shake, like he wants to go back. So that's what we do. We, you know, kind of design the proteins to kind of maximize, I would say, from a functionality standpoint, so that then they would fit in the final application.
We've been talking about the pea and pea protein, and obviously that's gigantic part of what you do, and Purus has become instrumental in really making the pea get into to become prominent. I mean, because, you know, as you talked about, nobody was talking about soybeans in this way before Purus came along. In the very same way, it seems, you know, pea protein now. What makes this pea protein so interesting, you know, comparing it to other proteins, plant proteins out there?
Yeah, the first thing I would say that's pretty prominent is the availability of raw material. Like peas, when you compare peas, soybeans, and corn, there is a big gap. Approximately, I would say 90 to 100 million acres of soy and corn bean is grown in the U.S. alone. But when you compare it against peas, it's only 1 million acres. But still, it's the availability of raw material. But when you compare peas against chickpeas, again, the count really goes down from there. The first thing is you have peas available to process. So that makes it unique. The second thing is peas are very allergen friendly. So when you look at like other proteins, such as like animal proteins, such as like also dairy and such, people can be allergic to the proteins itself. But peas, a lot of people are not allergic. So that what makes it unique. The third thing is when you look at the amino acid composition. So when customers are consuming proteins, the first thing they look at is, of course, taste, but also a lot of people look at it from a health standpoint. So understanding, does it have all the amino acids? That when I'm talking about amino acids, I mean by essential amino acids. So peas have all the 9 essential amino acids. So that what makes it unique as well. And from a processing standpoint, it is like we have built systems to really kind of extract the protein. So the yield is very favorable too.
Now, Purus emphasizes vertically integrated US-based sourcing. How about this model, and how does this influence development decisions, new product pipeline, all that?
Yeah, so that's a great question. This is basically when we look at the supply chain over the last, I would say, probably couple decades, we have been working on creating a supply chain that is going to be very redundant because peas generally love cold climate. So they love cold and dry climate. Specifically when you look at the growing regions, it's going to be the Dakotas. Those are the areas that peas love the most. But we have been working to diversify the genetics. So also we are going into regions that are going to be hotter and drier, or also regions that are going to be a lot more, what do you call it, are going to have a higher amount of moisture in the soil. So really working on diversifying the genetic system, that's like a big key. Because in 2022 or 2021, in that time frame, we got hit by a really bad drought. And that really affected how we could procure our peas. But then we realized like, hey, no, now we got to really diversify our growing basis. And that's what we have been working on. With that, it really like reduces the pain from a supply chain standpoint on like, hey, where can you source your peas from? So I think that's, I would say that that's a key step that we have been taking so that the technology that we create can be applied to like I would say the majority of the peas that we procure. So from that standpoint, our technology is very agnostic.
You know, it's a thing that customers have become more and more demanding of clean label, minimally processed ingredients. That's become much very important to people right now. At the same time, you got, you know, brands, retailers, consumers demanding positive climate or regenerative ag messaging. They're also in tune about that. So how do you balance that when you're looking at functionality, you're looking at transparency, you're looking at trying to sustain sustainability and taste of all things too? How do you put all that on a balance and make that a balance?
Yeah, so we try not to think about it as a trade-off. So like sustainability, regen ag, that just pretty much table stakes, I would say. So peas, when you look at peas, you start with like peas always, they require less water. So from a sustainability standpoint, that's a really good call out. The second thing is they will add nitrogen back to the soil. So peas on an average will add around 80 to 90 pounds of nitrogen per acre. So that versus corn will demand around 200 pounds of nitrogen. So from that standpoint, it's very nitrogen positive. Also, it requires less fertilizer to grow as well. So the crop itself is very sustainable. When you look at regen ag, I think partnering with the right farmers to kind of understand the supply chain, the systems that they have built to keep the supply chain from not deteriorating, to make sure that the system stays healthy as the crops grow. So kind of putting those things in the processes is what we work on.
So looking into the future here a little bit, where do you see the next big breakthroughs in plant-based or alternative proteins coming from? New crops, new breeds of existing crops, new processing, what, anything else? Like, what are you seeing?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think it's a combination of all those. But with that said, there is a line that our CEO, Tyler Lorenzen, really says. He says it really well. Taste is the on-ramp to healthy habits. Mm. So I think the the breakthrough is gonna come when we can create, and we have a lot of new products in the pipeline that are gonna be delivering on the taste, but I think the breakthrough is going to come when people don't have to compromise when they eat plant-based foods. So for example, 2 years ago, we launched a really unique product from a sensory perspective. We call it Purist 2.0. So it built upon the technology that Purist has been working on for decades on kind of creating plant proteins with excellent flavor and functionality. Now, this year, we are launching a third generation product. We are calling it Purist H to the Izzo. It's a rap name, but that really nails on like customers who are really looking for that dairy like experience. When I say that, what I mean is having the sensory profile of drinking ultra filtered milk, because when customers are utilizing proteins, you know, they think like plant proteins are going to be thick, super thick, almost pudding like, but that shouldn't be the case. Also, plant proteins should taste like dirt. That shouldn't be the case. You know, it should just taste very clean. It should be easy to work with. So that's where the breakthroughs are going to come from, is like, hey, building up on the technologies over the years and kind of delivering customers with that unique experience. Also, the breakthrough is going to come from, I would say, by creating unique proteins. When I say that, what I mean is, again, some of you must have heard of like clear proteins. That really kind of gives, when I say clear proteins, it's basically like a protein that's going to have very much a profile of like a crystal clear clarity. Also proteins that would be stable in high acid products, because traditionally when you look at proteins, they don't like acidic systems, especially plant proteins. So like creating proteins that would be stable in those applications. So we recently launched Clear P for that same reason. So you could also deliver proteins in like fruit juices and sparkling sodas. It just gives people, customers, a different way to add protein in their daily routine. It doesn't always have to be a thick protein smoothie. You know, it can be a very different approach to eating.
So how do you collaborate with food brands or startups to kind of accelerate the innovation process and maybe bring some of these new ingredients to the market?
Collaboration and partnership, I would say, if done right, can really unlock a lot of value, a lot of innovation. So that's very key to what we do. But again, I think I would like to take a step back because you can't just go out there and say, oh, I am going to go collaborate. You know, it's great. Yes. But even before you do that, I think trust comes first. You have to create relationships over the years. You have to create partnerships with people that you can trust, and they can trust you in return. Without that, especially in the environment of business, collaboration doesn't work. It will fall apart. So I think like over the years, I think one thing I realized is people love working with others who they enjoy spending time with, you know, because as you collaborate, innovate with people, there are going to be situations where things don't go the way you want it. You know, things might go wrong, but can you have a conversation with the other party saying, hey, this is where it went wrong. Let's find a solution. So I think that's where I think the trust is important. And then, of course, we definitely love collaborating with our customers. A lot of startups, I would say, university institutions, and also with ORI. So I wanted to give a shout out to Jason and Alan on the team, because again, when I say you want to work with people you like spending time with, so They are just very enthusiastic about like offering their solutions. And so like I really collaborate with them as well on different things.
So as a leader, how then do you attract and cultivate top scientific talent like yourself, you know, in a competitive, fast-moving space, how do you attract, how do you get that buzz?
Over the years, the leadership team at Pyrus, I really need to give them a shout out here. They have created a system, a culture, where people want to work. And it's an approach of attract, retain, and develop. So what we have done is we have created a really great, internship program. So really kind of hiring young minds and giving them the opportunity to kind of work with us. I almost define it as like dating, because, you know, when you hire somebody, you are married at that point. You know, you don't want a divorce because sometimes it could get expensive. You know, you're putting so much time, effort into the relationship. So I almost think like having a solid internship program where you kind of give people the opportunity to come work with you so that you can test, you can see how they work, they can see how you make decisions, you can align, you can see if they're still aligned to the mission of the company, if they still kind of fit into the culture. Because I feel like no matter how smart you are, if you don't fit in the culture of the company, I don't think it works. So I think creating that system up front. So again, we have created a great internship program. And then once you get hired, like we have a lot of strong processes built in to support the journey. So for example, we have like an annual talent review program where we kind of understand like once you get hired in, you may want to do something else a year down the road. But is there a business need for that want? Kind of aligning those two things. I think that's important too. So that really goes into that talent review process. And then again, giving everybody the opportunity to speak up. I think it's very important too. Having your ideas heard. I think that's important too. Because I feel like we have created a culture where if you are a go-getter, you will get the opportunities to go prove yourself. So I think that's very important.
Super important. Kush, thanks so much for taking time. I know you're a busy guy. You got a lot going on, but you took some time to really get into this and dive in. And so it was great talking to you, and exciting stuff going on with Pure as always. So thanks for taking time.
Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Bye. All right. Kush Shanduk, he is the VP of R&D at Pure. He's our guest this time around on the Ag Innovation News Podcast. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. This has been the Ag Innovation News Podcast, presented by the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute of Minnesota.